Welcome to Season 2 at Disability Bandwidth,
a show where we talk with experts in disability about their journey, life, and inspiration.
I'm Nikki Nolan.
And I'm Sam Prue.
Let's get started.
Would you mind introducing yourself?
I am Billy Price. My pronouns are he and him. Visual description, I am a white male. I got brown hair. It's kind of short. I guess I'm going a little bit bald in the back. Oh my gosh, I'm getting older. Blue eyes, and I'm wearing a gray, kind of a charcoal hoodie with a colorful scarf that a coworker gave me from Edinburgh. Behind me is kind of a grid wall covered in shoes because I'm in the shoe business.
So excited to get into there.
Now that we know who you are, what's your role? What do you do?
So I am one of two co-founders of the company Billy Footwear. We're based out of Seattle, Washington. And as the name implies, we have a shoe business, and really our what separates our brand away from everybody else in the pack is that we have zippers in our shoes. And the way the shoes are configured, there's zippers that go on the outside of the shoe and around the toe, where the whole upper of the shoe can actually unzip and fold over, so you can actually drop your foot in unobstructed. So all the shoes out there, you have to shove your foot into it. Like Nike, yeah, they have a zipper in a shoe, but you still have to shove your foot in. There's no other brand on the market that allows you to drop your foot in, like actually see the whole insole and to drop it in unobstructed. So you can actually lead with your heel to step into your shoe. So that's kind of the differentiator of our brand. And it's been very disruptive in the market. And it's been really exciting.
It feels like that could well be one of these solutions, like the electric toothbrush, that starts out in the disability community, and then people realize that it's just a better way to do things. Is that kind of your ultimate vision?
Well, this whole brand, like the whole premise and the importance of this design. As a wheelchair user, I broke my neck when I was a teenager. I fell out of a 3-story window, broke my neck, broke my back because it was a head first fall to concrete. And it changed my world. And there were so many things I used to be able to do that I can no longer do. And on that massive list was shoes. So later in life, I teamed with a buddy and we decided to do something about it. So our mission was really to like make it so I could put my shoes on. So it started with one pair, and we made a sample and it worked beautifully. And when I tried those shoes on, I was actually 36 because I broke my neck at 18. So literally half a lifetime later, I was taking back that independence. And really the moment was so special. It was a driver to force us to want to share this with the world. And so the vision, the mission and stuff like that, all of a sudden somewhat transformed, going like, oh my gosh, like, okay, now this works for me. What can we do in the mainstream space? And it wasn't a matter of like trying to make something adaptive, like something like, oh, okay, if you're like Billy Price and you have a broken neck and you have a spinal cord injury and a quadriplegic, this is the shoe for you. I mean, that's a true statement, but that's a very narrow market. We wanted to cast that net as big as possible, create something that was more of like a universal design that took fashion and function, smashed together, and just was very inclusive in nature. So the vision was to create something that worked for everybody, but not denying that the functionality and the origin of the story came from an adaptive space. We just wanted to like, instead of having like more silos, we want to just blow up the silos, just like make something even, like a level playing field for everybody.
Yeah. And it's an interesting balance to strike, isn't it? Right? Because you never want to deny disability. You want to be true to your origin. You want to embrace your identity. But at the same time, you don't want to restrict yourself, right? And have you found yourself playing with that line? And how do you think about that?
Well, it's a great question. It's very much a great question. Like, so, I mean, just from the shoes perspective, it's like if it can very much satisfy the adaptive space, but the part that really warms our heart is it's not necessarily constrained by the adaptive space. It can be a mainstream shoe for everybody. And I think in our mind, that brings like not only inclusion, but it brings equality. And you know, there's this image out there that's floated around the internet. I only saw it recently. And it talks about there's three kids, like one tall kid, one like medium kid, and like one like short kid. And they're standing in front of a fence. And there's all these boxes. And it talks about what would be equal, what would be like fair, and then what would be like more like just kind of the different situations. So if it were equal, everyone's standing on a box, but you still can't, like the short guy still can't see over the fence. Like it's still like they're not tall enough. So if there's more like equity, it would be more like, all right, well, the person that is the shorter, they'd be standing on more boxes so they can all see over the fence. Well, then there was another image that I saw where it just removed the fence. So like they were calling that justice, where it's like, well, great, that's the perfect picture. And unbeknownst to us, like, that's kind of what we were finding ourselves that we were doing. It's like, well, shoot, instead of like creating like these silos, like, okay, here's like Billy, like not being able to put his shoes on. Let's create a widget for like this type of model. Well, shoot, let's create something where it's like, just removes the fence. It's just like, everybody can kind of enjoy that. So when you ask that question, talk about like disability, like I've really kind of, I think I've struggled with that term disability, because when I broke my neck, I had a very difficult time accepting the word disability, because all I knew was like this life prior. And I was kind of like denying myself of the current situation. And it was both the driver, but it was also like stubbornness. And I would say through this journey, I've really identified with the word disability, because yes, I do have a disability, but it's not a restrictor. It's like, it's more like a different ability. I've just, my life, I would say, I haven't been held back by this wheelchair. I've been more like empowered by this wheelchair to be able to get me, propelling me forward in life.
Mm. So you've touched on this a little bit, Billy, but what are some of the key moments that led you to this place that you are?
Oh boy, there's so many real big milestones. And I would say the very, very first one that really propelled me on like more of a growth mindset was, you know, after I broke my neck. I mean, when I was in the hospital, mentally, I was struggling, like really struggling with this new world, this new life. And mentally, I went to a very dark place. I mean, I was like feeding myself poisonous talk, like it's not worth living if you can't walk. Because I was so fixated on like the prior life that I had, which is a fiercely independent kid playing lots of sports, being good at sports, being that kid that could kick the soccer ball and win the goal, you know, and now all of a sudden being in this space where I was very dependent on others. Not to say that I wouldn't like need help like prior to that, but it was just a matter of like not being able to like solve the problem on my own. So because of that, mentally, I went to a very, very dark place, and all I could think about was what I had lost. And one of the pivotal moments early on, and which really formulated what would be coming later in life, was to be able to let go of what I lost and instead focus on what I still had. And part of that was simply still being alive. So like falling three stories out of a window, like head first to concrete. I mean, that's not, crunch those numbers. I mean, you could have died. I mean, so just the fact that I was still alive, that was a motivator to keep moving forward. So I would say that was like a very, very early on in my journey here. That was a real motivator that would get me out of bed. And then the next one was just kind of seeing the incremental growth over time. And it never happened as fast as one would want. It was a slow journey, but it was a matter of like, okay, well, maybe today I can roll my wheelchair 10 feet. Tomorrow, maybe I can do 20. Tomorrow, maybe I can do 30. And like incrementally over time, you start really gaining miles.
How did you find the community of people with disabilities was like during this process? Because, I mean, first of all, hospitals, the medical system, right, can be not great, can be not inspiring as you're trying to recover. And I kind of notice a problem sometimes that we have in the overall disability community is that those of us like myself, for example, who were born blind, get very frustrated at somebody who, say, went blind later in life and is dealing with this loss and this grief because, like, we didn't experience it and our lives are great. So if you say your life is not worth living, it's like an insult to us. And I know that's the same in the space of folks with physical disabilities, right? People who were born that way and people who acquired it later in life, there tends to be that kind of tension going on. And so I just wonder, what was the support that you got during that process for you? Was it what you wanted? I mean, obviously you got through it, so you got what you needed, but could it have been better? What was that like for you?
I mean, there was a lot of push-pull there. And what I mean by that is there was some mentorship, but there was also me struggling with being in denial. I mean, like my brain would be, I mean, for like, you know, for quite some time, like for, I mean, definitely like while I was in rehab, not the entire time, but I was struggling with like just being fixated on being like that miracle guy that was going to walk out of the hospital. So when someone would roll in their chair and I'd ask the question, how long have you been in a wheelchair? And they would say 2 years or 5 years or 20 years or 30 years. I would see that, and mentally, internally, I would say like, well, that's not going to be me. I'm going to walk out of this hospital. But it just didn't work that way. But so what really was driving me was more, I mean, I would get the nuggets from those that would come in and be those mentors. Like, for example, like in the hospital, like the occupational therapist would say, well, okay, well, now it comes time to like how to brush your teeth, like how to write your name. And there would be some sort of like adaptive tool that one could use. And then someone would come in that had been in the game for, you know, a quadriplegic with the same functional level as myself. They would come in and say, you know what? What are you going to do? Like, you're going to go to a restaurant, you're going to forget your gadget. That means you're not going to eat. You got to figure out how to use what you have to make that work. So that type of mentorship, I would take that on. But still, internally, I was kind of struggling being that guy that would just walk out. But it was also like just the surrounding community. I mean, like the nurses, the doctors, the physical therapists that were creating this safe culture around me that's saying like, look, you have potential. It's like, well, shoot, like your potential isn't dictated by whether you can walk or not. Your potential is like by just you being you. So it was that type of like creating that safe environment that really allowed me to choose to change and make a mental shift and to see like here we go. Let's do something with life.
Yeah, but it sounds like for you it was a pretty internal process. Nothing could happen until you were ready for it to happen.
It was very internal, and there were a lot of tears for sure. And the thing was, like, I was in the hospital for 5.5 months, which seems like a really long time. The crazy thing was, I mean, this is 1996. So at that time, that was considered the accelerated process. Now, someone with a similar injury, if they're going to the hospital, they're in and out of the hospital in 2 months, which just blows my mind. Like how, like where I was at 2 months, there is no way. I just feel for someone that breaks their neck now to kind of wrap your arms around all that stuff in 2 months time. I don't even know how you could possibly do it.
Yeah. I mean, we have all kinds of listeners to this podcast at all different disabilities and abilities and levels and spots on our life journey. And if you were talking to someone who was going through that now, who is you at 19, what would you say to them? Have you done that? I mean, that kind of mentoring thing. And yeah,
I have. I've been asked to go back to the hospital and talk to guys. It's been a while since I've gone in, but typically when I go in and I just listen, because there's so much going on. I mean, cause there's like the internal struggle to try to like comprehend, like understand what happened, let go what have happened. Like that just horrible, horrible question that one asked, like, why me? This is an unanswerable question. And it's not, one thing that helped me along the way was that why me question turned into why not me. It's like, just by adding that word not, and like, well, why not me? Like maybe I'm the one to try to like move forward. It's not to like try to put yourself, like puff yourself up. It's just a matter of, it's like, just try to build up internal confidence. But the challenge is like myself, it's like, you know, I need like wider hallways. I need a wider bathroom and stuff like that. So to be on that very, very short period of time being an inpatient, it's challenging to get something in order outside of the hospital for you to land next. But when I go in and talk to those guys, it's just a matter of, I'm not really like giving any sort of advice. All I would say really is just more like, it's going to take time. It's going to be a process. Nothing's going to happen as fast as you want it to be, but you just got to keep your head in the game and just make incremental improvements. I mean, it could be like inch by inch by inch, but that is like compound over time.
Yeah. And it sounds like you really went on that journey of disability. And you know, it was interesting that you said at the beginning, you really struggled with the word disability, right? And seeing it as shameful and as a limiter. And I think for a lot of folks, maybe even including you, even as you make progress, even as you learn to use the wheelchair, learn the techniques, learn the tips and tricks, you're still seeing it as limiting, as bad, as negative. And so what was it that changed your perspective on disability? Because it seems like today you do embrace it as a valid part of who you are.
Oh, absolutely. So I would say the shoe journey really, really started opening my eyes, because it was just an empowering tool. And I felt this transformation in me, you know, really happening over about the last like 10 years, really embracing like me and like being able to like say like, yes, I am an individual with a disability. But I would say the person that framed it the most eloquent for me, and she identified like what the passion was inside of me, like what my emotion was, but I was never able to put it into words. And her name is Emily Pryor. Emily, I hope you get to hear this. She's a young gal out of Perth, Australia. And I was having a conversation one time, and she said that she really embraces her disability. She has cerebral palsy. She's like, I have a disability. And she's a very, just an incredible, incredibly young gal. And her comment was, if we were all the same, like, how boring would that be? So, you know, yes, it's like being a disability. It's like, it's almost like you're a superhero, right? It's just like you're, it's like, yes, we're different, but every single person is different. And it's like, I may have this difference on the outside, but there's so many folks that have disabilities on the inside as well. But it's like, you know, nobody's perfect. It's just like, that's what makes it so beautiful. Like, we're all create this colorful landscape. So in her words, I was like, oh my gosh, Emily, that's like the most wise thing. And how old are you? 10 years old? Like, wow. Thank you, Emily. This is brilliant.
And it seems like this idea that disability is negative, right? It has a lot to do with the external world and the way, and it's often more about the way the world is than about the way we are, right? I mean, it definitely seems like that with shoes. The reason you couldn't put on a shoe had more to do with the way shoes were designed than with you.
Yes, sir.
And now a really quick break to hear from our sponsor.
Hello, my name is Jamie. I'm a full-time screen magnification user. I'm a member of Fable's community of accessibility testers. If you're listening to this podcast, you already know just how important it is to integrate the voices of people with disabilities into every aspect of your product development journey. Fable can help you do that. From improving your team's accessibility training with Fable Upskill, to working directly with assistive technology users with Fable Engage, we can help you take the next step to building amazing websites and apps that are accessible and easy to use for everyone. To learn more, check out what we do at www.makeitfable.com and follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.
And we're back. What are some of the outcomes that you experienced when you started exploring and talking more or embracing your disability?
Oh, wow. There's so many places I can go there. You know, I'm reminded of a gal. Her name is Mindy Shire, and she founded a company by the name of Runway of Dreams. And it's a fashion show every year, and now there's fashion shows all around the U.S. And what it is like her mission was to be able to create like adaptive apparel, adaptive clothing in the mainstream. So it's been a matter of partnering with big brands to be able to make that sort of transformation. Unbeknownst to us, like we were kind of like already in this swim lane, like, well, I guess a little bit ahead of the bow wave, like while this thing was like really, really blowing up. So like when talking about like big changes and stuff, like in like me, like embracing like disability, like empowering, like having the word disability, like being an empowering word instead of it, you know, the opposite. It's just, it's been a real like transformation for me. And it's been, boy, I mean, it's hard to put into words. I mean, it's just been an emotional driver that just makes you want to get out of bed each morning. You know, like, you're like, we got to do more.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that I'm curious about, because you talked a little bit about not wanting to like focus on the adaptive space, wanting to make a shoe that is different and that is mainstream and that is accepted. What has the response to that been like as you've been marketing? Do people get it, or is there kind of a feeling of like, oh well, this is really the disabled shoe, he just doesn't want to say that, or doesn't want, like, what's the market response and the response from various communities, whether it's fashion or what's it been like?
Well, when you look at, we actually look at the numbers, like the analytics, the actual number of sales, the sales going out the door, it really is a 50-50 split. But I mean, it's kind of hard to like identify like what, like, disabled, what you call that. I mean, it's like someone, I mean, where you draw that line, I don't typically try to do that, but we get that question a lot. Like, okay, well, you bring on a new retailer or something like that. It's like, well, what's the, if this is a disability or is this not a disability? Like, where do you put all that line? But it is about 50-50. I mean, like, think about myself, like being a parent of two kids. I mean, I have a 4-year-old, and anything we can do to get him out the door faster is always a good thing. So having a nice, easy on, easy off shoe is always good for him. So that would be like kind of categorized more like the non-disability side. But one thing I will say is having just a shoe that works for everybody, it's incredible because you can get into retailers that now can serve potentially an audience that they haven't been able to serve. So it makes good business sense, which is great for us as well, because it makes, I mean, like we casted that net as big as possible to be able to like go after as big audience as possible. But to be able to like make in a more inclusive environment in a storefront as a community, as a society, we're all better for it. It does have the functional nature, so it does get categorized as like the disability, like adaptive type shoe, but it's not a space we're constrained by.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe there's, we define the term disabled narrowly because people think that it is shameful when it isn't, right? For example, I bet somebody with arthritis would not call themselves disabled and yet would benefit hugely from a shoe like this.
Yep, you are correct. Yeah. And we can talk for hours about that. Like, we probably would never really get to an answer. It'd just be like a very thorough discussion where you draw that line between like, what is adaptive? I mean, it's just like, and all of a sudden we kind of pull back going like, well, shoot, we're all people. So let's make something that works for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, should we be drawing that line at all is maybe the starter question, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think we should draw the line. I think it's just like we should accept people who they are and like make it inclusive.
I fully agree with that statement. The world I want to live in is like one that doesn't even care if you're disabled or non-disabled or whatever. It's just we create these places where everybody's just included, where we just create things so that like everybody can participate. I'm going to transition to the next question. What community have you discovered and created through your journey?
It's wild. Like when we first entered into the space and we started with this Kickstarter campaign and just to try to test the market space and just to see if people would identify with what we were trying to do, like just being able to put something out there with like an alternate type entry point into a shoe. And we started with 2 kids' shoes, 2 women's shoes and 3 men's shoes and threw it out there and people really got excited about it. And I remember there was someone that reached out asking if it works for AFOs. And I had to like basically press the pause button and go to Google to type in AFO, like what is an AFO? Come to find out AFO, ankle foot orthosis, like a rigid piece of plastic. And they would have a hard time like shoving their foot into a shoe. And I was like, oh my gosh, like you're struggling with the same challenge I do, like actually having to shove your foot into a shoe. So it worked out well. And then we just kind of entered into the marketplace, like starting with kids and the success of that, like expanded to toddlers and women's and men's. And then all of a sudden, like we have this Facebook, we created Facebook, Instagram, like all the social channels. And then all of a sudden, parallel to our Facebook page, we see like a community page that pops up that says it was like Billy Footwear Shoe Swap. So somebody had created their own channel and they recognized that the brand was working for what they needed for. And they're like, well, shoot, like maybe people could come together and start swapping shoes. Or a situation where, you know, if you have different sized feet or like some sort of like limb difference, like maybe you have a size 8 in one and a size 9 in the other, they were buying like 2 pairs of shoes and then they would try to swap the other pair for maybe like somebody else out there that maybe had just the inverse. And then somebody reached out to us going like, well, could you sell to someone 2 different size shoes? And that's when we started our like different size, a single shoe program. And we just, they asked the question. We said, sure, we'll give it a shot. So that type of community, I would say, is one example. We also have a lot of collaborations going. There's so many nonprofits out there that for rare diseases that are really trying to raise awareness of what's going on. It's been a real honor to be able to, you know, hear those stories and be a platform to elevate those stories so more people find out about it. And then we're kind of working together, which generates our own little community. So I guess those are 2 pretty big examples.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you started on Kickstarter, which seemed like it worked out great for you. It's you and a co-founder. And have you had to go through the kind of investment and raising investment and all of that? And if so, what was that experience like for you as a person with a disability getting investors on board, or have you been able to kind of bootstrap it?
So we started off really bootstrapping. So when we started this baby, it was really a side hustle. Darren and I were working our full-time day jobs. And then we would do this thing on the side. We'd do it at evenings and we'd do it on the weekends. And it just kind of grew. We did that for about 3 years. And then it finally got to a point where we had to step away from our day jobs. Like our team had kind of grown, like just everybody just sweating for their equity. It got to the point where, and at that point, this is about August of 2017, we were in Nordstrom and Zappos at that time. And then there was a viral Facebook post that really got a lot of attention. It was shared about 280,000 times in 3 days' time. And now it's like, I don't even know, over 500,000 or so, but it got a lot of attention. A lot of people found out about the brand. And it really drove the sales way up. So we just, like, as individuals, just didn't have the bandwidth to do both. So we had to step away from our day jobs and do this thing full time. So, but the thing was, like, our day jobs were kind of the facilitator to be the financial injection and actually our kind of our own savings. Because it's challenging as a startup, you know, it's very difficult to go to a bank because they see it as high risk. Even though they may love the idea, be very, like, supportive of it, you just don't have any real track record to be able to get financing. So you're really forced to bootstrap it. But then I guess you can only go so far. So then you have to start working, like, to try to get some financing and funding. We were fortunate to be able to, like, within our own network, to have friends that would be willing to loan us money. Or you'd have some money, you grow the business enough where there'd be some potential where you could actually sell off some equity. And then you kind of grow to yourself to a point where you can actually go out and start getting traditional loans. So we were fortunate to get a small business loan later on, but that happened just this last year. So we've been working on this thing for, you know, 7 years now, and it took all that time to finally be able to get a loan. So a lot of sweat and blood and tears to be able to get to that point.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that was just because you're a startup and startups are sort of a risky venture, or was there maybe doubt is like, oh, well, a disability product, will this make money? Will this go anywhere?
It was all related to startup, just the mm-hmm. way it is with the business. Because the business, we definitely had the track record. We had this very, I mean, like, we were in Nordstrom, we're in Zappos, we're in Kohl's. Like, these are very, very high visible, you know, tried and true businesses. We had our own e-commerce, the sales were there. It's just the nature of a startup. So it's just tough. I mean, it's just tough out there to start a business. I mean, just period.
And I mean, of course, the other thing that we all hear about every day on the news when it comes to clothing, shoes, fashion, any of that, is copycats, right? People taking the thing and selling a knockoff on Amazon. Have you had that happen? And if so, how do you think about that?
There have been, we have seen other styles out there that have kind of duplicated what we've done, not in the States. It's been more international. We've seen them pop up every once in a while. But oftentimes when that happens, it's such a small run that the price point is significantly high. And then also the quality isn't there. So when you see it, you're like, okay, I see what they're trying to do. They're trying to match what we're doing. But then you look at the actual, like, price point. It's just the market's going to, you know, dictate, you know, who you're going to go to. It's like, you're going to look at our brand and like, okay, well, that's a competitive price for what I would pay for a regular pair of shoes. Or there's this other one I've never heard of that's 5 times more expensive. So that's that it hasn't been a problem, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, so it sounds like you're not too worried, right? I mean, more people.
Well, I mean, you got to kind of
get access to the thing, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, as a business owner and stuff like that, you got to keep your eye on what's going on out there.
Yeah.
But the big thing is on our side, it's a matter of like creating brand awareness. We need to be able to like be very proactive to be able to get the Billy brand out there and the messaging, the mission, the statement, just the branding, the functionality, the success stories of the customer. I mean, our marketing is more like, we're not necessarily going to tell our story. We're going to tell the customer story. Like, tell us how you do. Like, it's like all of a sudden you get this feedback saying like, oh my gosh, I've like experienced this like transformational deal where my child was never able to put their shoes on. Now they can. Or like, we've searched like long and hard to be able to find some sort of shoe that works for whatever sort of situation. And now we have a success story. That's the stuff we got to celebrate. It's an authentic, you know, win. So it's fun to share.
Absolutely. Although it does make me curious. I mean, full disclosure, I work at an accessibility company, Fable. They sponsor this podcast. And one of the interesting things about being in this space, whether it's directly or tangentially, or whether you're in the space in a wider space like you are, is getting the word out there, right? Because people with disabilities have so much stuff. It was interesting you were talking about in the hospital, right? They're giving you all these gadgets. There are so many things marketed at you. And then there's also so many restrictions now, like on the internet, right? Facebook or not any of the companies across the board don't want to like let you advertise specifically to people with disabilities, because that's like, I get why, you know, that's not great. We don't want to be targeted specifically for ads. And so what has been your experience of getting the word out and getting people who are your customers to hear about you?
Well, word of mouth has been really, really powerful. one way, I mean, we have multiple channels where that word of mouth goes out. Social media for sure. You're right. Every once in a while, the whole medical stuff. Yeah. I mean, I don't quite get that whole thing of why stuff gets flagged the way that it does and why the restrictions on there. But every once in a while, we do get flagged within Facebook and like being quoted as like a medical thing. But we're not a medical brand. So we challenge it. And then all of a sudden our organic post goes through. But I will say that we are in stores, given the functionality of the shoe and like given the success of, you know, so many customers, it is referred heavily just within, like, for example, an occupational therapist. I mean, if they're looking for some sort of a functional shoe that's easy to go over, like maybe some sort of device, orthotic device, or someone like myself that doesn't have very good hand dexterity, or we talked about arthritis earlier, you know, just the word of mouth and like hearing other success stories out there, it does get to referred to through like rehab clinics, which is really exciting. Or on the flip side, you know, someone goes to Kohl's and they're like, oh my gosh, like here's a nice easing off shoe for my kid, or Nordstrom or Zappos or Target or QVC, or even like being on QVC. Like every once in a while, I make my mug shots like on a, like doing some sort of presentation on a, like the home shopping network saying like, hey, like here's a new brand, like it's easy to step in. That type of stuff like generates word of mouth, and that's kind of how that brand awareness gets out there. I'm really intrigued about getting into, you know, just doing more podcasts, like just being able to like identify like target audiences and just tell the story and say like, hey, you know, Billy Footwear's out there. Maybe just take a look and see what you think.
Yeah, podcasts are absolutely amazing, says the guy with the podcast.
Speaking of word of mouth, that's how we found you, was like a friend recommended you. So I'm going to take us back during this sort of like experience. Was there anything that you discovered that like really surprised you?
I think the part that, I use the word surreal a lot, and maybe that I guess that might be a synonym for like surprise. It was just more like the creation of this brand. I mean, it was just this small little idea. Darren and I were spitballing. I mean, like, so if I go way back, I mean, like what happened was we were at a Christmas party. I mean, Darren invited me over to his house. I grew up with Darren, like we've known each other forever. And, you know, we were just talking over a Christmas party, catching up. And he was telling me about a shoe project that he was working on just randomly. He like just challenged himself to be able to make a shoe. And he was telling me about this. And as he was telling me this, it just got me really excited. I'm like, wow, that's incredible. And I was like, well, Darren, you know, I broke my neck. You know, I like fell out of a window. You know that I struggle with some stuff. And one of these things is shoes. And I was like, and I just threw an idea at him. I threw the idea of like having that wraparound zipper. And it was just a situation where he identified with it and had the ability to, and the resource and the connections to be able to make a design and make a prototype. And when he gifted it to me, it just transformed my life. And the moment was just so special. It's like, well, let's try to share this. And it was, we didn't really know where this thing was going to go. And the part that I guess surprises me is a delightful, delightful way. It started with one shoe. And just this past summer, we sold our millionth shoe. So to talk about the surprise part, to go back in time when that conversation first happened, and then if someone were to say like, all right, well, stick with this, and then 7 years from now, you'll be able to have 1 million sales under your belt. And that's the tip of the iceberg. In that moment in time, I think it would be very, very surprised. And my jaw would hit the floor and I'd have a hard time picking it up. And it just catapulted us into this world of, I don't know, just feeling like just having this feeling like we have this obligation to fill this gap in the marketplace. And it's been such an honor to do so.
1 million shoes. First of all, like, congratulations. That's a heck of a milestone. Just getting those, that many of something that you made out into the world, you know, starting from a Christmas party, right? Drinks and conversation where all the good ideas come from. But you actually acted on it and pulled it through and, you know, made it happen. Despite the last 2 years that we've had, I mean, we've been through a pandemic. How did that affect you at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Where do I start? Man, the last 2 years, that's been a roller coaster. Supply chain just went bonkers. It really did. I mean, our business right now, I mean, I'd say about 40% of our total revenue comes to our own e-commerce site. And then the remaining balance comes through wholesale. And when the pandemic hit, I mean, no one was going to stores. So that whole wholesale channel, for the most part, just dried up. Because, I mean, a lot of that had to do with storefronts, like people going into stores, and people weren't able to go into stores. So that wholesale channel just closed. I mean, a lot of them, like, all of a sudden really started injecting more effort into their e-commerce channel. But still, it was very problematic on our side, because so many of those shoes all of a sudden were returned to us simply because of a cool shoot. If they can't have them in store, and if they're not set up already to be able to go wholesale or through an e-commerce channel, they would just return them to us, and we had to accept those. So that was very challenging on cash flow and stuff. And then plus, to be able to already have orders in place with the factories to be able to have more inventory coming in. And then, but the thing was, I mean, like we were all in it together. It wasn't just like one particular demographic or one particular country. The planet and every single person on this planet was impacted by the last 4 years. So we all were in it together, all struggling, trying to like figure out what was going to happen. And we were all had to kind of come to terms and get comfortable with this new reality. So when we all kind of together became comfortable, it was interesting because the sales, just from the revenue perspective, the sales came roaring back. So yes, like 2020, like the early part was very challenging, but we actually met our projections in 2020 just because the third and fourth quarter were just so, people were hungry. People were just like, oh my gosh, I want to get back to my U. I want to get back out there. And then it kind of like took a dip again in 2021. And then 2022 was really difficult when it came to more like the supply chain part of it, because there was the factories, then there was the shipping part to get from like overseas. That was incredibly expensive and like very difficult to get on a boat. And then lastly, it was a matter of like getting stuff into ports and getting stuff into housing. So we finally weathered all that storm, and we're entering 2023 in a very good position to really light this place on fire.
Awesome. Thanks so much for, you know, being so open as I grill you. So fascinating. I could talk about these things forever. I mean, it's just,
yeah, you could.
The shoe business, something I don't know anything about, but hey, our time is drawing to a close. So why don't I, Nikki, why don't I pass it over to you to close things off for us with the last couple of questions?
Yeah. I'm really curious, like, what are some small ways that people can start towards like a path of inclusion, access, or even like furthering the rights of people with disabilities?
You know what? I would start by just volunteering, participating. There's so many nonprofits out there that are just doing incredible things. And inclusion doesn't necessarily, I mean, it's like go feed the homeless, you know, just like work at a food bank. I mean, just like volunteer some time. And I mean, like the powerful organization that something that was near and dear to me, like I did sports before I was in a wheelchair, and I wanted to do sports after I was in a wheelchair. So one of those sports was skiing. And I just had this sit ski and I go up there on the mountain, but it takes somewhat of a village to help me when I'm on the ski slopes. So there's lots of volunteer organizations that, you know, help get folks out there to be able to, you know, just participate in the outdoors, both as the participant, which would be the person with the disability, but also the volunteer to help facilitate that whole thing. And as a community, I mean, everyone's having a great time. I would say that's a great place to start. It really is. It's a real eye opener for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a bit of a tautology, right? But it's so true. Do stuff and stuff will happen.
Love that. Yeah. It's that basic, that simple.
Before I close this off, is there anything that you're burning to talk about or burning to tell us about or burning to say, or a point that you want to get across that we didn't ask you before we close things off?
There's just so many things. I mean, there's just so many different facets. I mean, I guess what I would say is, but there's so many moments in the hospital that I was just stuck on my own thoughts and just like not understanding of what the next step, what the next day, what the next moment was going to be. And it really took a lot of folks to help me through that. And one of the things I loved to call out are the nurses, the doctors, the physical therapists that live in somewhat of a thankless job. I mean, they have very, very difficult situations. I mean, medical space is very, very challenging. Fingers are always pointed on there. Like if you do something wrong, you're totally called out. If you do something right, you're not really thanked. And I just really am indebted to the support they gave me that really You know, they really believed in me before I believed. They saw something in me. They saw potential. They saw something that I had before being in a wheelchair. And it was really that coaching. They weren't my friends. They were my coach. And as a coach, they push you. And it was that pushing that I needed to get out of my own way to get back on track to do something bigger. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And the job is only getting harder and continuing harder with all the pandemic stuff that's going on, isn't it?
Oh yeah. There's some challenges for sure.
Yeah, some challenges, some burnout. I know folks in the profession, and it's not easy. But then it's tough all around. But yeah, great work that they do. And I know we're super short of time, and I do want to make sure that we get to this. Where can folks find you? And what do you want to plug? I mean, Billy's shoes, of course. You got to tell us where we can go buy a pair.
So our website is billyfootwear.com. Billyfootwear.com is a very informative site. It is an e-commerce site. You can purchase through that site, but there's also a tab that says store locations. So when you click on that and scroll down, you'll find there's a world map filled with little goat pins all over the place. And you can see all the major retail partners that we're at, as well as all the independent stores throughout the globe. There's the US, there's Canada, there's Europe, there's Australia. So that's a great place to go. On social, it's all at Billy Footwear on all the channels.
I have a question. What is the goat? Is it just because of Billy and there's Billy goats? Like, tell me what this goat is. Why the goat?
So the goat, that's our logo. It's a goat. There definitely is the play on words, Billy goat. But really, when we started the brand, we were looking at something that just embodied this attitude of tenacity, grit, determination, something that if they had a challenge, it was just going to put its head down and blast right through it. So I think of those, the goats that are scaling the Alps that just are defying gravity, or that ram, which is the big rack on its head that's just going to not back down, or just the goat on the farm that's providing like nourishment for the family. I mean, all that stuff is embodied within that logo.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know there's this sort of various organizations, right, where you can like buy a goat for, you know, families in need and that support and that nourishment. Ever done a partnership there? That'd be fun.
We contemplated that. We've actually contemplated like as a give back, like some sort of goat program, like just buy such and such, like you get a goat for like some family. We've yet to be able to like land how that would work. But I would say sometime in our company timeline, there will be goats given. Somewhere.
All right. The company that gives a goat, probably not your slogan.
Thank you so much for being here. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, this was so fun. Thanks for being open and honest and authentic and answering all of the questions that we had let you know about and all of the random ones that we came up with on the spot.
Well, my pleasure. It was absolutely, I just thank you for the opportunity. It really meant a lot.
Thanks for listening to Disability Bandwidth. If you like this episode of Disability Bandwidth, please subscribe and share it with friends and family. Today's episode was hosted by Sam Prue and Nikki Nolan. Edited and produced by Nikki Nolan. Transcripts are written by Emma Klauber. Theme music is created by F.A. Ackman. Special thanks to everyone at Fable who, without their support, this show would not be possible. You can find out more about Disability Bandwidth on Twitter and Instagram @DisabilityBandwidth or on our website at disabilitybandwidth.com.